This is Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. Turn that frown upside down. Look on the bright side. Find your happy place. These are all common sayings with good intentions for people feeling down in the dumps. But if you're one of those who would sooner hear nails rake across a chalkboard than a Hallmark-like platitude served up with a side of snap out of it smile, you've got something in common with Kim Corson. Corson's new book of essays and reflections on her life is a response to that find your happy place request. It's called I Don't Have a Happy Place, Cheerful Stories of Despondency and Gloom. And among the very funny things you'll discover about Corson in the book is a list of things in life she doesn't really care for that most other people rave about, including convertibles, traveling, eating on the beach, chocolate-dipped strawberries, and parades. Kim Corson grew up in Montreal and now lives in southern Vermont. And since I found myself nodding yes, yes to many of the things she finds disagreeable in life, and maybe you will too, I am delighted to speak with Kim Corson about her new book. And Kim, thanks for joining us on Morning Edition.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a book really for the curmudgeon in all of us. I'm first curious, though, about how it came about. Were you writing about your childhood years growing up in a Jewish middle-class Montreal family, first on a blog and then this became a book? I mean, how did it all come about?
I had actually been writing a novel, and when we briefly moved to New Jersey and were considering moving to Vermont, I happened to start a blog because I didn't know if we should move, and I was riddled with anxiety about it. And I noticed that the writing was coming much easier than when I was attempting the novel. And somehow, all those complaints turned into a book.
And of course, you use your real-life compatriots in the story, your husband as a prominent figure in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And not everything that you write about him is what you would expect when someone is writing about their spouse. You talk about meeting him for the first time. You didn't think he was particularly attractive. How did he feel about his portrayal in the book?
He thinks he comes across terrific. As do most people. I've heard tons of, I call him Buzz in the book, and I've heard tons of people tell me how much they love him.
Now, you also write about being the kid who didn't like the rah-rah crowd growing up. You would seek out other kids in school who looked as miserable as you felt to be friends with.
Yes.
What was it like going to a French-speaking school in Montreal when you only spoke English at home?
Terrible. I went there from kindergarten through fifth grade. It was a giant school, very Catholic, very serious, and I felt intimidated and dumb and terrified all the time. I did miserably there.
Why did your parents send you there?
To be honest, my mother really dug the idea of uniforms because she thought that would help our relationship later on if we didn't fight about clothes, and I kind of think that was the number one reason.
You know, despite a lot of unhappy times that you had as a kid, you point out in the book that nothing terrible or traumatic really happened to you, and that in some ways you wish it had, because then you'd feel more justified about having a negative outlook on things. You also reveal, though, that depression of one kind or another does run in your family. Why do you feel that your own mild depression, as you describe it near the end of the book, isn't good enough, if you will?
It just seemed lame to finally get a diagnosis. You know, I've been waiting for some sort of diagnosis, as I say in the book. I'm a bit of a hypochondriac. I've been to the doctor a number of times. You kind of want to be validated a little bit and get some kind of diagnosis, but nothing terminal, nothing, you know, dreadful. So I thought when getting the diagnosis of dysthymia that I would feel excited. But as I've learned about myself, I don't really get excited. And I found the negative in it. And I found it was kind of a middling, lukewarm diagnosis.
How do you look at your own childhood years compared now with the kind of lives that your own young children are leading? Do they have it better or worse, do you think?
They possess some of my fancier negative qualities, but my daughter has a pretty excellent attitude. I once did a little test for them. I put a glass of water on the table and I asked both of them, do you see this glass of water as half empty or half full? My son said, I don't really like water. So I changed it to Gatorade. He goes, what does that mean? I say, when you look at it, do you think, oh no, this is all I have left? Or, oh, I have so much more to drink. And he, without missing a beat, said, this is all I have left. And then my daughter right away said, I'd be happy to have a glass at all. So I think they're doing better.
So you were living in New Jersey at the time, and there's a moment where your husband wanted to move to Vermont, and you had a certain reaction to that. And I wonder if you can sort of walk us through what that reaction was when he said, let's move to Vermont.
when he suggested this, my reaction was, I absolutely cannot move to Vermont. And he said, why not? And I said, because I don't look rural. And he laughed, thought I was joking. And I was serious. And he said, what does that even mean? I'm like, I don't know. I just don't look like a farmer or someone rural. I won't fit in there. And then I thought there weren't real dentists here. I couldn't move here. And I wish it was fiction because it's kind of mortifying.
And what about living in Vermont now? I mean, how long have you been here? And have you made your peace with living in this rural area?
This is our fourth year of living here full time. And I actually love it. And I realized, I said, I think I'm happy here. My husband said, you know, as happy as you get. And I think that's quite true.
You talk about the happiest place on earth in this book, and this is one of the funniest things I think I've ever read in any book, and it's about Disney World. Now, for someone like yourself, Disney World might be the last place you want to go.
Yeah.
And you were prepared to hate it, but something happened to you there. Can you sort of briefly describe what occurred to you on that trip to Disney World?
I went kicking and screaming, and I don't know what happened to me. It started slowly on the It's a Small World ride. I started to get a little weepy and sentimental, and slowly but surely, I ended up having the best time out of the whole family. I was mortified. I didn't know what was wrong with me. My daughter wanted to go back to the hotel. I practically pushed her on a ride, like, let's go. We have lots of ground to cover. I loved it. I couldn't believe it.
It's interesting, too, how you and your husband, you seem to be on, you know, different sides of this duality here. And I can relate to that. I mean, my wife is definitely the more positive of the two of us. All our friends know it. All our family knows it. Do you think that there is a real need for opposites to attract in that way to counterbalance each other?
Oh, absolutely. If we were both malcontents, at least all the time, I mean, we would never leave the house, which would be fine with me. But most people probably would like to.
And when you hear authors that write a lot of self-help books and they talk about the power of positive thinking, that sort of thing, do you think there's a case to be made for that outlook on life where some people say, look, always expect the worst, you won't be disappointed?
Yes, that works. Because usually the worst doesn't happen.
But it's gravy if something good does happen, I suppose.
Absolutely. And then if you're able to process that, if you're able to go, oh, that kind of was good. I'm not so good at that.
Kim Corson is the author of I Don't Have a Happy Place. And thanks for taking the time to speak with us and for proving that a half-empty glass can still be full of a lot of laughs.
Thank you.